And welcome back once again. This is the 355th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. And I do have an announcement to make. This will be the last Parish of the Patriots for 2025. We will be back. Don't worry. We will be back for 2026. This is the last show, though, for 2025. We're wrapping up the year. This year has just flown by. It's just crazy. I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's just simply a case of when you get older, time flies faster. You know, there's people I've read where people theorize that, you know, when the Bible says, you know, had the Lord not cut those days short, no one survived. And it's like people define that as the days are literally getting shorter. Time is flying by faster. And it seems like that. I'm not saying I buy into that, but I can see where it comes from. But I can tell you for sure, the older you get, the faster it flies by. I cannot believe this year is already past. The 355th show will be the last show of 2025. When we're back here next week, we'll have been starting over in a new week. I don't know to look forward to it or not, but we do plan. I do have every intention of being back. I hope all of you had a great Christmas. I hope you had time to enjoy it with your family, whether it's your immediate family, wife, kids, whatever. Or perhaps getting together with the extended family. I hope you had the opportunity to do that. I hope it went well for you. I'm recording this on Saturday, by the way. And so this is the part where I always tell everybody, you know, if you get something out of the show, you know, we got the snail mail right here in the description page or the description for each show. Snail mail is all I got. Oh, you know, I don't have, forget the Bitcoin addresses or whatever. I mean, those are Sven's. If you want to send something to Sven for Radio Albion, that's fine. I'm not discouraging you to do that. But for me personally, the only thing I'm going to see is something you put in the snail mail. And because I just got back from Christmas stuff myself, I haven't had a chance to check this week. So if you send something and you're like, he should have got that by now. We've got the post office working at their normal, shall we say, impressive pace. Plus, with Christmas holiday in there, you know, it may or may not have arrived on time. But I didn't get a chance. I'm just telling you up front, I didn't get a chance. But it'll be there next week. I will have every intention of having a chance to check it next week. So, yeah, I just got back. I just had time to sit down and get this show going. Of course, as always, we will have our Christian-specific segment. And as always, that will be at roughly the halfway point of the show. So hope you'll look forward to that. That's the part I look forward to the most, if I'm being completely honest. You know, with the year going by, it's been a crazy year, you know. And you have to think 2026 coming up is going to be just even that much more insane. It's not going to get more sane. Clown world is... the first part of the show, you know, I'm never lacking material because there's always something stupid going on. There's always something clownish, you know, crazy going on. So this part is generally pretty easy. And this year has been just one crazy clownish thing after another. I guess I'll just talk about some of the more recent crap. I don't know. It's just, you know, what do you want to talk about? I'm so fatigued with politics, but that's where a lot of the clownish stuff is represented. You know, this is our interactions. We see, you know, where they dictate to us from. I saw where Trump, you know, Trump came out and made that speech here recently, and he's like just totally trying to gaslight everybody. Best economy ever. Inflation is going away. I'm like, okay, Brad. You know, I mean, just, gaslighting is only going to take you so far. I see one of the funnier things. He came out the other day, and he came out with that thing the other day about bringing back battleships. And I read this article, and I just honestly had a laugh. You know, he makes this grand announcement, we're bringing back battleships. And of course, everybody's reaction was like, these were obsolete. How long ago? You know, we have big, and of course, it's just become a meme at this point. I mean, it really is all theater. You know, he makes this announcement. We're going to build all these battleships. And of course, they're going to be Trump class because they probably have to have gold on them, but they're never going to build them. But anyway, and he wants to build the biggest battleships ever, blah, blah, blah. And they're going to be Trump class battleships. And they're going to have laser pew, pew, pew lasers. So they're going to have hypersonic missiles and rail guns. And it's just like a little kid. You know, with Christmas coming up, you know, and you like ask a little kid, you know, you ask your kid, like, well, what do you want for Christmas? This is Trump. You know, you got a little like a 5-year-old boy and he has a grand imagination. Not that there's anything wrong with that in children. In your supposed political leaders, it's not so great. You ask your 5-year-old, say something. Christmas coming up. What are you hoping? What are y'all hoping Santa's going to bring you? And Santa and your 5-year-old is like, I hope he's going to bring me hypersonic weapons. And I want a hypersonic toy. And you're going to be sitting there like, that ain't going to happen. You're detached from reality. I'm hoping to get psychic powers for Christmas. You better settle for I don't know. All I can think of with toys is stuff from when I was a kid, so it's too dated. No one will get the references. You better be just settled for that Steve Austin action figure, whatever the hell. You ain't getting psychic powers, and Trump ain't getting no hypersonic weapon. I just thought it was funny because he's like, he wants to build these super battleships. And the first thing that strikes out at me is with what shipbuilding capacity? I remember reading a story, I think it was earlier this year, Crazy Clown Year, 2025, where they only have one supply ship. And so the one supply ship for the entire Navy broke down. So they had to like pull the whole carrier task force out because the one supply ship. They don't have the shipbuilding capacity to build anymore. But we're going to build a fleet of super battleships. It's going to be armed with hypersonic weapons, which the U.S. doesn't have yet. North Korea got them, but not America. It becomes at some point detached from reality. And the fact that he comes out and makes these statements with like a straight face. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, you know, because I don't know. Again, I have a disdain for politics at this point. I really do. I usually, as you've noticed, I'm sure, probably much to some of y'all's dissatisfaction, I try to talk about just about anything else because this is all just theater. And it's become theater of the absurd. But for whatever reason, inevitably, politics will come up. People ask me about politics and these things. And I was telling somebody the other day, I said, well, you know, when Trump was in there the first time, it was completely different than this time. And Trump got in there and he listened to those who told him, well, you know, he came time to, you know, appoint a cabinet, put people around him. And he listened to those and said, well, these guys, here's a list of guys. These are the experts. Oh, of course, they're the regular, usual Washington, D.C. scum of the earth insiders. And he appointed these people because they were the experts. And they, of course, all proceeded to backstab him, undermine everything he tried to do. It's night and day. I've heard theories that the Trump that's here now isn't even the same Trump. That they've replaced him with a double. I'm not sure it's wrong because it is that night and day difference. I'm open to the possibility. But in the first Trump term, he appointed the experts. He listened and said, well, I got to appoint those that are experts in the field, the best people. Only they weren't. They were the same neocon retreads that always show up. And they all advocate for the same failed policies. And that's what we got in Trump's first term. They all proceeded to immediately backstab him every chance they got, undermine everything he tried to do. One of the most glaring examples was Trump's idiotic decision to, you know, put John Bolton into any sort of position. And of course, as soon as he got a chance to blow up the negotiations with North Korea, he did so. And now we have this next round, you know, the second round of Trump. And it's like he's trying to avoid that mistake again. He's put all of these other people in instead of, you know, the quote unquote experts. Well, that's all well and good in and of itself. That is a good decision. But I think what he was going for was, I look at it and just what you can glean from his personality. I don't think he was going for, I'm going to appoint people that I think are actual experts in the field, not what everybody else is telling me, this guy's an expert. Instead, I think what he was going for is, I'm going to be sure I surround myself with loyal people. And that makes sense considering how his first go at being president worked out. Surrounding himself with a bunch of vipers, a bunch of backstabbers. But I think the problem comes in is that Trump defines loyalty as people who will kiss his ass. I really do. You see this. And there was a deal right after he went into office this year. And it probably like a month or so afterwards. And they were having a cabinet meeting. They're having this big table. And all of these people that he's appointed are surrounding him. And the press is in there, and they're all spewing out their questions and whatnot. And each cabinet member is giving a report. And every report was this ridiculous, sycophantic ass-kissing in public. You know, well, my report is, due to the brilliance of President Trump's policies about this, that, or the other, they all were just standing up like a humiliation ritual. Every one of these people is standing up and taking turns publicly kissing his ass and going on about how brilliant he is. I think that's kind of how Trump has come to view loyalty. That's not loyalty. In fact, at the end of the day, usually an ass kisser is the least loyal person around you. They're just kissing your ass. First chance they get, they jump ship. Usually the ass kissers resent you. I would think back to that spectacle of them sitting around the table and it looked like a humiliation ritual. There's no way virtually every one of those people standing up and going through this whole groveling about how wonderful Trump is and brilliant he is and his amazing insight and policies doesn't have some element of resentment in there. Nobody likes an ass kisser. Nobody likes being an ass kisser. And yet there they are. You know, in a position like that, I look at this, and again, I was having a discussion with somebody about this recently, and I said, you know, loyalty is not ass kissers. You know, loyalty is somebody that's going to back you and going to, you know, try to make sure that you succeed. But loyalty also means having somebody that will, when you come up with something, they'll look at you and say, that's stupid. You know, your best friend is not the guy who will just go along with whatever you want to do. A true friend is somebody who will sit down and you say, well, I'm going to do this, that, or the other. A true friend will look at you and say, well, that's a mistake. You know, you're telling me, I assume you're wanting my opinion. You know, if you want my opinion on this, I will tell you that you're about to make a big mistake. That's stupid. It's kind of like, I remember when the older you get, the more whatever you're going to say starts off with, I remember back when. But, you know, I remember back when, you know, back before Michael Jackson died, you know, and he got so weird, you know. And by the way, me personally, I don't really believe the whole, oh, he was diddling these little boys thing. Let's just say he was starting to really buck and speak against those who happen to control the music industry and Hollywood, etc. And then all of a sudden, especially after he dies, you get all of these, so he was diddling these little boys. Now, I don't know. You don't know either. Me personally, I'm pretty skeptical about that. It's pretty easy to go in after a man's dead and sit there and, you know, trash them. drag them through the mud and claim that, you know, they were doing these things. But that's not the point here anyway. Don't be writing. Don't be sending me an email going, you know, he was absolutely diddling little boys. Look at that weirdo. That's not the point here. I remember back before any of that really came, but there is no debate that he got weird. And I remember, you know, whenever that topic would come up about how weird he got, because you're old like me, you remember, you know, like the Thriller album, you know, back when Michael Jackson was still actually black, had that little Jerry curl thing going on, you know, and he, you know, he didn't get weird because then he like got all this plastic surgery because he told everyone he wanted to look like Elizabeth Taylor. Like, what the hell? He got weird. And I remember talking about it back then. And, you know, I remember making the observation. I said, one of Michael Jackson's problems is he doesn't have any friends. He's got all kinds of people around him, but they're all ass kissers. They all just, no matter what he comes up with, you know, yeah, that's a great idea, Michael. You want to get another plastic surgery and make yourself look as much like Elizabeth Taylor as you can? My gosh, this brilliance is unprecedented, Mike. That's great. By the way, do you mind if I use the Lamborghini this weekend? I got a date. It'd be really cool. See, a real friend would be like, Mike, bruh, what the hell are you doing? You know, you want to build an amusement park and have all these little kids around you. You want to just be surrounded by little kids all the time. That's weird, Mike. You need to stop that. People are going to think you're a weirdo. See, that's a real friend. A real friend would have told Michael Jackson, you're starting to get weird. You need to quit being weird. You know, real friend to tell you the things you don't want to hear. And somebody who has real loyalty tell you things you don't want to hear. Nobody, Trump obviously doesn't have anyone around him that'll tell him what he doesn't want to hear. They're all just ass kissers. That's one of the worst positions. I think that's just as bad as being surrounded by backstabbers. Because they're all going to sabotage you at the end of the day. And when the ship sinks, so as to speak, they're all going to jump ship and blame you. Every one of these ass kissers that are up there kissing, I guarantee you at some point down the road, they'll write a book trashing the guy. That's not loyalty. Going to build a fleet of Trump-class battleships with no shipbuilding capacity, so as to speak, equipped with hypersonic weapons, which the U.S. does not have and can't seem to manage. Oh, and let's go ahead and throw super laser weapons and rail guns on there. Why? Pew, 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 pew. Why not? It's just laughable and sad. Laughable and sad at the same time. I don't know. Of course, you know, as we roll through 2025, you know, we're going to have things carry with us into 2026. You know, the Ukraine thing is still dragging on into 2026. This is still going. Now, I don't intend to get off into the mechanics of that. You know, Dr. Johnson, he's got a book out on it. He's our resident expert on that. But I will say, and I jotted this down the other day because I read another commentary article about the Ukraine. And, you know, I will, if I come across those things, like I'll read an article and something strikes me, an element of the article strikes me, I will jot it down. You know, I don't really have show notes per se. Like a lot of people will do show, and there's nothing wrong with that. We all just have our own way. I always just fly seat of my pants. You know, I've always done this way. This way, I always do what I'm comfortable with. I've never had a script that, you know, really going through. And sometimes that shows. Probably I should. We would have less rambling. But that's the way I've always done this. The way I always will do it. It's who I am. It's how I do it. But I will come across an article. Something will strike me about an article. And I will just jot it down. And just a one-liner thing so that when I sit down to record this show and I'm sitting here going, what the hell am I going to talk about? I can look here and go, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And my note I had jotted down after reading this article was basically, if I have to read another article about the quote-unquote Nazi regime in Ukraine, I'm going to scream. Yeah, I just... it makes my head want to explode. It makes me feel like my head is going to explode when I have to read these articles, you know, and I'll see something about you and I'll pick a commentary. Usually there's like a commentary piece or whatever. And I read a lot of different people when they pop up. Sometimes I'll read something by somebody I've never read them before. I'm interested in hearing what other people's opinions. If you want to hear a different opinion on something or a different viewpoint so that you can consider it, maybe, you know, hear something that you hadn't thought about before in a different manner, you got to read different people. And, you know, I click on this article. I don't even remember what the headline was, but I thought, you know, let's see what this guy's talking about. And the person, you know, they brought some decent points up, but over and over it goes into the neo-Nazi. The Nazi regime. The U.S. continues to support a Nazi regime in the Ukraine. Whenever I have the misfortune, I didn't finish the article, I don't think. I got so far, you know, by the time I was up to like the sixth mention, which felt like the 6 millionth mention of the neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine. Supporting these Nazis in Ukraine. We are at the point where the term, quote unquote, Nazi doesn't even mean anything anymore. No matter who's using it, it doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, for we endured years of anybody the left didn't like was a Nazi. You know, just no matter what, they were a Nazi. You know. A normal woman who's a mom that doesn't want her kid to go to drag time story hour, she's a Nazi. Everybody's a Nazi. And now we have the regime in Ukraine, which is run from the president virtually. It's Jewish. You have an essentially Jewish regime running Ukraine. And yet we get these articles going on about the Nazi regime in Ukraine. You know, it flies in the face of the truth. This is why I can't. Let's try this a different way. Referring to the Ukraine as a Nazi-run country, you might as well go ahead and say Israel is a Nazi-run country because it's essentially the same thing. No, if I read something and people are going on talking about, you know, Netanyahu is Hitler and Israel is a Nazi country, I'm going to sit there and say, well, that's stupid. You know, it's because it's just simply not true. But it's also not true for the Ukraine. You know, they had some units that, you know, try to keep their guys hyped up, you know, to convince them to go to the battlefield. I think those units are all gone. Again, I'm not going to get off into that because I'm not an expert in that. Dr. Johnson knows a lot more about that than I do. But I do know enough. I don't have to be an expert. I know enough to know that it is absurd when somebody writes over and over in a single article referencing the Nazi regime in Ukraine. Volodymyr Zelensky, yes, he's definitely a Nazi. You can tell. When I record these shows, all throughout, we're what, episode 355 now of this show. That isn't counting the Daily Nationalist shows, the Daily Nationalist shows I've done with Sven. All throughout my podcasting history, I've always tried to focus on the truth. And sometimes I go at it from a funny, you know, a humorous angle. Sometimes I criticize things. Sometimes I look at things from different. But my focus here, for me personally, is always the truth. And so the flip side of that, when I run into something and people refuse to speak the truth. You know, look, I'm not saying I expect somebody who writes an opinion piece like the one I had to try to torture my way through and was unsuccessful at doing so. You know, I don't. It's not like I want them to sit here and go on and on about, you know, how much the Ukraine is, you know, after the 2014 revolution, because it wasn't really a coup. The military didn't take over. But after the 2014 revolution, basically everybody running the country, running the government after that was Jewish. Look, I'm not even saying I expect them to write articles going on and on about, you know, why is Ukraine being run by all these Jews? I don't care. I mean, it's an obvious thing, but you can make the point you want to make without going on and on about that. It's not like I want to see these people talking about the Jews. I don't really even care about that. You know, I don't. You can make the point if you want to make a point about, for instance, Ukrainian corruption. You know, you don't have to write a piece going on and on about Jews because people get wore out with that too. But for heaven's sake, save me going on and on about Ukraine is a bunch of, it's filled with a bunch of Nazis. I mean, that's just stupid. If you would, National Socialist Germany hadn't been around for over 80 years now. I mean, let's move on already. It's just absurd, and I'm sorry, at the end of the day, patently dishonest to go on and talk about the Nazi Ukrainian regime. That's just stupid. Again, I don't care if you don't want to point out that Zelensky's Jewish, and again, I always think about that conversation that got leaked of, what's her name, Noodleman, but she calls herself something else. Newland, Victoria Newland. You know, and they were discussing who they were going to put in charge of Ukraine after 2014, the 2014 revelation. And of course, she went with Yats. You know, I mean, he's our guy. Everybody involved in this conversation was Jewish. And I don't care if people don't even want to get into that because it's been covered already. But for heaven's sake, spare me the whole Nazi thing. I just the term should just be banned because I'm tired of hearing it. You know, National Socialist Germany's gone. The bad guys don't always have to be the Nazis. It just wears me out. You know, again, these articles going on about the Nazi regime because they feel safe. They feel safe. Whenever I read that, because I think, you know, look, just make your points. You don't have to point out any of it. Stop with the name calling. Just point out the Ukrainian regime is very corrupt. You can make an article, a piece about the corruption that's inherent in the Ukraine. And that's not, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the Ukraine, period. Whenever I read somebody, they're making a point going on and on about Ukraine being Nazi, the neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine. Whenever I read that, this is what I see. I know nobody's writing those articles probably listen to this show. But if you are, whenever I read that, I always think this person wants to say something about Jews and they're just saying Nazis because that's okay. You know, that's the way I read it because I don't understand the point in saying something that's patently and observably not true. You know, so when I see people in this particular opinion piece I had tried to read, you know, it wasn't like a passing thing. It was like over and over. Like I'm so far through the article and they were on like their fourth or fifth mention of pointing out that the Nazi regime in the Ukraine, like Zelensky is sitting up there with a swastika behind his desk. It was just absurd. When I read that, I think that person really wants to say something about the Jews. I don't know why else they're doing it. You know, they feel like they need, but they don't want to say that. So they do this whole Nazi thing because that's okay. It's just, once again, it's all so tiresome. You know, I don't make it through the article. Don't come at me with talking about the Nazi regime. And, it, you know, some of that too is because Putin does that. It just drives me crazy. You're going to de-Nazify the Ukraine. What the hell does that even mean? You know? I mean, anyway, I'm sure we'll get to look forward to more of that in 2026. More articles bravely talking about the Nazi regime in the Ukraine. I just stop. Just speak the truth. Just make your point. Speak the truth. Because the whole going on like that, it's just not working. It's just silly to me. If you want to say something about the Jews, just say it. You don't want to sit there and use like Nazi for code word or something. It just looks silly, you know? And most of the points, they could make here, you don't have to bring up any of it. Just make your points. The place is a corrupt shithole. I mean, you can make that point without calling them all Nazis or going on about Jews. I mean, you could just make the points corrupt shithole. It is what it is. I don't know. you know, maybe it's just me, but that just drives me crazy. Every time I read something, they're going on about the Nazis in Ukraine, the Ukrainian Nazi regime. It's just stupid. Like Zelensky is walking around with a swastika armband or some shit. It's just stupid. You know, other things we get to look forward to in 2026 is more crackdowns. You know, and this isn't really even meant to be like a 2025, 2026 wrap up. It's just that's kind of the direction I've gone in because I don't know what else to talk about. Trump has appointed this rabbi. He's going to be like the czar over anti-Semitism. What's that going to mean? Of course, I mean, yeah, I mean, we're not absurd. I think the UK has become like the foil. You know, they're playing the role of the most absurd version of speech restrictions so that Americans will sit here and go, you know, well, we still got the First Amendment. They won't ask questions like, what's this anti-Semitism envoy, ambassador, whatever the hell Trump has appointed? I mean, what's he going to do? He's going to be head of the office of shut it down. I mean, seriously, he's got to have some sort of function. What is he going to do? But people would just blow it off because, like, at least we're not the UK. I saw an article yesterday, and apparently in the UK, and Sven, I need to find it again and send it to Sven because it's, you know, it's something he might want to talk about on one of his daily national shows or something, but basically, a school teacher teaching a class in the UK, as part of his class, he played some clips from some speeches Trump gave. And, of course, he got turned into prevent and investigated for committing a hate crime. It's like the UK is playing this role of being so absurdly over the top. And their ridiculous speech law enforcements. That way the Americans will sit around and not think twice about, you know, we have an ambassador about anti-Semitism or whatever the hell. You know, it's at least we're not Britain. We're going into 2026 with a lot on the table. We got a lot of things cooking on the stove, so as to speak. Trump and his Venezuela nonsense. Now they're just doing piracy on the high seas, state stealing oil. They won't tell us where the money's going. They're no doubt selling the oil. Who's taking the money? Those questions never get asked. Wouldn't it be neat to have a real media, like somebody does an actual investigation and follows that oil when they seize these tankers and see where it gets pumped out, see where it gets sold, and see where the money goes? That'd be interesting. You know? They've been going on, you know, because the EU has been wanting to steal Russia's money that they seized primarily in Belgium. And they're wanting to out and out steal it. They really already have. It's just a matter they haven't spent it. They've already stolen the money. They just haven't spent it yet. And then they want to spend it on the Ukraine because a certain percentage of that goes back to these EU officials and these different politicians. It goes in various people line their pockets. They're going to steal this. If they steal this Russian money and spend it on the Ukraine, the Ukrainian grunts out in a trench are going to see like virtually none of that. It's all going to just line people's pockets. That's why the EU wants to keep this going. They're all lining their pockets. Yeah. But they've really already stolen the money. They just haven't spent it yet. They're stealing this oil, and they're selling it. I mean, they're not just putting it in storage. The U.S. is, in other words, the U.S. is doing the same thing. I read all these people talk about distractions, you know, and all these stories going on and on about the EU having this big debate about whether or not they're going to officially steal the Russian money. And it's kind of a distraction because nobody's asking, where's this oil going that they're stealing from Venezuela? The U.S. is doing the same thing. They're stealing this oil itself. Where's the money going? At least the EU is claiming they're sending it to Ukraine, whatever that means. But where's this oil money? Who's getting it? You know, now simpleton leftists would just say Trump. Trump is getting it. Trump is getting it. I can guarantee that money is being spread out in a lot of damn pockets. That's why you're not going to hear about it. So anyway, we'll have that continuing to go on into 2026. I'm sure there'll be continual gaslighting about the economy doing great. I'm not real optimistic about the economy going into 2026, but we're all just got to, you know, what are you going to do as a regular person? You just keep going out there on your grind and doing the best you can, make the best living you can for yourself and your family. That's all you can do. No sense in agonizing over, but it is interesting. It is interesting to observe these things. And as I observe the clock, we've got to get into the Christian specific segment. I could keep going on about that. I could do the whole hour on this easy, but we're not going to. We're going to go ahead and get into the Christian specific segment. So as I say every week, you know, to get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, as it were, the Christian specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. If you read the book of Proverbs, you're going to find repeated warnings about slacking off, so as to speak, and things along the lines of a little folding of the hands and the roof caves in, a little folding of the hands, a little rest, just taking a little bit of a break. And it doesn't take much. Basically, the warning is it doesn't take much. Slacking off a little bit doesn't take much to bring about ruin and things start falling apart. Of course, I very much believe this can be applied spiritually. It's written in a manner warning against, you know, physical thing, you know, your livelihood and making a business, maintaining your life. But I think we can also obviously apply this spiritually. And I thought we'd get into that a little bit, because then this leads us to the question. If we apply a little folding of the hands, a little slacking off spiritually, starts leading to the proverbial roof caving in on our spiritual growth. Well, this begs the question, why? Why is it that way? Why is that so? Which then leads you to the age-old question that's been debated for probably since man has walked this earth, and that is that question of, is man naturally tend towards sin? Is man, his natural state, tendency towards sin or the spiritual? And I think that'd be an interesting thing to get into, maybe look at from possibly a different angle. And I think we could apply the warnings in Proverbs about a little folding of the hands and the roof falling in. So when we think about, or you ask the question, if you address the question, is man's natural state, all things left aside, is man naturally going to be sinful? And to me, I believe the question comes back to, you have to ask a more specific question, and that is, well, what do we mean by man? And what do we mean by man's natural state? You see, do we consider man's natural state the physical body, this thing that keeps us bound to the temporal realm, this body that we inhabit now? Is that what we call a man? Or what we think of as a man, is it the spiritual? Is it your spiritual being, your spiritual body, your spiritual mind? Which is it? Because that very much is going to make a difference. You know, which it comes down to that age-old thing of definitions matter. You know, if you're having a discussion with somebody, you know, an actual discussion where you're both trying to get to the heart of the matter, one of the first things you have to do is make sure that you're on the same page, that you're not talking past one another. Because if you're working with different definitions, you're going to wind up talking past one another, and you're never going to come to a consensus. Now, as we all well know, dishonest debaters will intentionally twist up the definitions of words, the meanings of words, because they don't seek the truth. They look to obfuscate the truth. They're looking to hide it. They want to make it confusing. This is another element of by their fruits you will know them. You'll know if you're dealing with somebody who is honestly wanting to work with you. You can debate somebody in good faith if you're both actually working towards the truth. In other words, two men can disagree on a topic and debate that topic, but you can actually get somewhere if both men are actually wanting to get to the truth of the matter. This in turn requires both men being willing to, if presenting the truth, to give that ground, to say, oh, you're right about that. And it has to be a two. If this happens, then debate can lead to a greater amount of knowledge and understanding, because now you have two minds working on a question rather than just one. A man who questions your point of view on something is going to bring up things that perhaps you haven't thought of or you hadn't considered when you were sure that you have come up with the answer to the question at hand. On the flip side of that, somebody who is not an honest debater, they will simply try to hide the truth. They change the definitions. They're trying to just make you look stupid. They're trying to put on a show. And there is a, obviously there's a very big difference here. In ancient times, men would have debates because they were both wanting to get to the truth. Debates in this modern age are largely pointless because they're viewed at as competitions. Two people debate now. Well, they aren't both trying to get to the truth. It's like a sports game. It's like a sports ball game. They're trying to, they're on this team, the other guy's on the other team, and they're trying to score more points. The truth doesn't factor into it. They'll lie if it means they win. And that's it. And I'm getting a little off track here, but it's funny because it's like, well, what if you don't get closer to the truth? How is it even winning? The people that listen, they decide you got more applause. It's generally a waste of time because you don't have a case of two men trying to get to the truth. You just have two men trying to score points with one another. Anyway, to reel it back in, to reel it back on topic. If you're having an honest debate where you're both just actually bouncing things back and forth, trying to get to the truth, the first thing you have to do is make sure you're working on the same page as to what you're talking about. There's a line of whether or not you're a Holocaust denier. You'd have to define, if you were having a discussion on whether or not, what is Holocaust denial, well, you would have to have a definition of what is the Holocaust. This is an oldie but goodie that I reference to. Are you a Holocaust denier? Well, it depends on what you mean by the Holocaust. If you mean, did National Socialist Germany put Jews and a lot of other people into labor camps and keep them there for a matter of years, then no, 100%. I don't know anybody that denies that happens. There's multitude amounts of evidence that happened. It's obviously happened. That nobody in their right mind really denies that. If you're talking about pedal-powered skull-smashing machines, giant roller coasters flying into ovens and things such as that, then I'm going to have to be a little bit skeptical. Color me skeptical. So the point is, the definition matters. Now, in this topic, is man inherently sinful? Well, what do we mean by man? Are we talking about the physical man? And this relates to the warnings, the repeated warnings in multiple places in the book of Proverbs. A little folding of the hands, just a little letting up. Now, this would imply at first reading that man is naturally sinful because we're warned a little folding of the hands and the roof falls in. Just a little, just taking it a little bit easy and you can lose everything. It just all slips away. This would imply that man's natural state is one of sin. But I would say not so fast, because what are we defining as man? What makes up a man? Is it only this physical state? Or does man not have a spiritual element? Now, as obviously as believers, we put a lot of emphasis on the spiritual element. Paul writes about it extensively in the New Testament, the struggle against the flesh. And I think that's a very good translation there, that term, the flesh. He struggles against the sinful nature. He writes quite a bit about struggling against the sinful nature and against the flesh and the things of this, this world. And I think this gets down to bearing down also on the question, what makes a man? And as such, is a man naturally sinful? or is a man a spiritual being? Now, if we answer the question, why is it that a little folding of the hands spiritually, a little slacking off, things just seem to like just fall apart overnight? It's kind of like house cleaning. You know, you go through and you clean the house and you think you got it looking good. And it's like you just turn around and a week later, there's dust on everything. It's like, how did this happen? Just a little bit. I mean, I try to seek the Lord every day, but that's not always possible. I have things come up and I'm not able to sit down and quiet my mind and pray and read my Bible because that's just how life is. And if it's a couple days in a row, when I come back around and I do then have that time, it's like, I don't know, it's like you got a pickup stuck in the mud and you're having to try to get it out of the mud before you can start traveling down the road. You're trying to get it out of the ditch and get moving again, get that momentum going again. So you have a little folding of the hands and things start degrading. Because in this sense, the man, we're talking about what binds us to this temporal realm, this created realm that God, this plane of existence God created for us to cultivate us in, to nurture us, for us to potentially grow, this world. And what binds us here, the only thing holding you here is this vessel you're in, this physical body. When the physical body fails, you're done here. You will have no more business in the temporal realm, the physical realm. And because of this flesh, we're tied to the physical realm, to the earthly realm, the temporal realm. And as such, because this is how we interact with the physical, with the temporal realm, our focus tends to be, our emphasis tends to be on that, on your physical body, because this is what we're using all the time. This is how we interact in the world around us, but we're not always going to be in this world. So our natural state is to have a tendency to focus on this flesh, because I mean, if you just so simply, I'm sitting here recording and I will pause and sit here and drink some coffee. All of those things take manipulating the physical body to do what it is that I've set out to do. Everything, our focus is always on these vessels, these physical bodies that we use to interact in the temporal realm. And as such, those tend to have dominance. But we know that the flesh is weak because the flesh is bound to this world. It's bound to this world, so it's always going to have, you know, it is weak when it comes to things sinful. So if we define a man as the sinful nature, when Paul writes about the sinful nature, then a man is naturally, his natural state is towards, is to tend towards sin. However, if we define a man, as Paul writes about the spiritual nature, the spiritual being, then no, the man has a tendency, he has a desire, an innate desire towards God. And you see these things, and Paul writes about it multiple places in the New Testament. You see this back and forth struggle in the man. He goes off, and you see it in yourself. As you reflect on yourself, you see this constantly. This is a very frustrating thing, because your spiritual nature is drawing you towards God, and you put this work in to seek God and learn and to know and understand and spiritually grow. But then you turn around and do stupid worldly stuff, say stupid worldly things. You self-sabotage yourself. You're on your spiritual walk, you're focusing, you're trying to grow, you want to know the Lord, and you're putting in some time, reading in the Bible and praying and all of these things. And then your fleshly nature, your earthly nature will turn around. You will sabotage yourself. And it's this constant back and forth. The spiritual man desires the things of God. This flesh, these vessels that we're in here, desire the things of this world, because that's all they will ever know. these bodies will only know the things of this world. When we die and they return to dust, they're done. So as a natural part of the natural order, these bodies desire the things of this world. And again, because we are bound to these bodies, that is going to be the tendency. And this is why, to answer our opening question, why is it that a little folding of the hands and the roof falls in, spiritually speaking? Because we're in this world. And while we're in this world, everything is going to tend towards fleshly things, towards worldly things, because that's where we're currently at. So a little bit of spiritual rest. And we have work piles. It's like, it's your job. You know, you got a job and you take a vacation. You're looking forward to it and you take that vacation. And in a way, before you go on vacation, you're kind of dreading it. You know what I'm talking about. You know, you're looking forward. You're like, man, next month on the 15th, I'm taking a week off. I'm not going to be at this place. I'm going to think about this stupid place. And you're looking forward to it. But as it draws closer, your vacation, the 15th is drawing closer. There's a little twinge of dread with that. Not because you're not looking forward to not being at work, but because you know that when that week flies by, and inevitably does, you're going to get back and there's going to be this pile of crap that people dumped on your desk or people dumped on your workstation or whatever. You have everything organized the way you want. And while you were gone, they just took it upon themselves to rearrange all your shit. You know, just rearrange. Didn't ask. Didn't, no consideration. The crap that other people didn't want to do, they just piled it on your desk. He can do it when he gets back. He's on vacation. He'll be rested. You know what's waiting for you. You took 7 days off. You on vacation for 7 days and like, about two, three days back, you start having that more dread, you know, because how much have they piled on? How much is waiting on me when I get back? How much is piled up on my desk? How much crap have people dumped off on me? Because you're going to have a pile of work to do when you get back. It is like that. You take a spiritual break, and yet at the same time, you're going to have that much more work. When you get done, you're going to have that much more work to get back in the groove of things, get things back where you want them and back on track, heading the direction you want. It works for us this way spiritually as well. Because we are bound to these physical bodies, they're always going to be that tendency. We're going to be free of these at some point. But as it is, the tendency is going to be towards fleshly things, earthly things, while the spirit desires the things of God. This is why you have this back and forth. So how do you define a man? Is a man naturally sinful or naturally spiritual? It depends on what you're defining as a man. The physical body is always going to tend towards the physical because that's all it's ever going to know. When you leave this world, in other words, another way to look at it, when you leave this world, when you die and this body turns to dust, your spiritual self as a believer, you're looking forward to the kingdom of God. You're going to the kingdom of God. You're going to learn of the real existence. But your fleshly self, this body you're in right now, will never know that. It's going to return to dust. It's going to return. It's never leaving the temporal realm. The body you're in, when people recognize you, say, hey, Joe, how's it going? That physical self, your fingers you're touching, this physical body is never going to know about any of that. This is it. This is all it's going to get. It is bound to this earth. It will return to this earth. You will get a new spiritual body when you rise at the resurrection and you go to the kingdom of God. So this physical body is not what you're taking with you, in other words. And this is the way we're created. So, as spiritual beings, we spend our time, and it becomes so exhausting. It really does. We spend our time having dominance and making sure that the physical serves us, if that makes sense. It's kind of like, how can I put it? if you liken it to when people discuss money, when Christian believers discuss about money and people, you know, what's your views on money? And most people say something like that. Money is the root of all evil. And there's no problem with money. You know, it says in the Bible, money is the answer to all things. There's nothing inherently sinful or wrong or evil about money. As long as money is meant to serve you. Money should serve you. The problem with money is it has a real tendency to get dominance over us. If you become in servitude to money, now it's a problem. Now it leads to sin every single time. But it's not because it exists. You have to have money in this world to function, to operate. The problem isn't the concept of money. The problem is money is always meant to serve you, whether you have a bunch of it or very little of it, whether you have it in abundance or whether you have it in scarcity. And I've said this before. One of the things that's really tricky about money is it can enslave you in both states. The man who has an abundance of money becomes enslaved to it because he has so much of it. And that's the definition of his life. People say he's got a lot. That guy has a lot of money. He's worth this much. People use that term. He's worth this much, as if that's his entire worth. But that tends to become a man's own perspective of himself, is his money is his worth. And on the flip side, a man that has very little of it, he becomes enslaved by money due to its scarcity. All of his problems are related to money, so this is always his focus. This is what he always seeks out, where man should be spiritually seeking out God. The poor man, because of his lack of scarcity, because of his lack of money, because of money's scarcity, constantly seeks it out. As we are supposed to spiritually be seeking out God, in one's scarcity, they constantly seek out money. That's one of the really tricky things. But the existence of money itself isn't a problem. I'm getting a little off track because I'm trying to make that illustration, but the point is, money in itself is not a problem. It is meant to always serve us. If you are master over it, and you have that role where it serves you and not the other way around, you're not enslaved to it, whether you have a lot, a little, or somewhere in between, there's nothing wrong with it. If you've got $100 in the bank or $10,000 in the bank, as long as it's serving its proper role, and you view it for what it is and keep it serving you, it's not going to grab you and drag you to hell. It's just money. It's a temporary thing as well. It has to be in servitude to you. And here's where I drag this illustration back to what we're talking about and maybe make some sense of it. Your flesh is the same way. It is supposed to serve you. The spiritual nature should be in dominance. In other words, this is who you are. But you interact through this world through the flesh. You have to have the flesh. But if you become enslaved to the earthly, to the physical nature, to the sinful nature, then it gains dominance over you. Now you're in trouble. But because we interact through this world, through this physical bodies, it's always going to have this strength because we're at this time right now. At some point we won't be, and we'll no longer even have to deal with that. But while we're here, you're always going to have that draw because this is what we use to interact with the world. I'll get off on a little tangent because I do these mental exercises all the time. And a lot of the times I don't share these with y'all because they're just mental exercises. It's not something I can sit here and say, that's exactly, this is what I believe. It's just a mental exercise I go through to consider possibilities. And one of those mental exercises I was doing some time back is thinking about, you know, these bodies are how we interact with the world. This is, you know, when you touch something, you're using your hand. You're not touching it with the spiritual. You're touching it with your physical. If you go pick up a tennis ball, you're not picking that up with your spiritual hand. You're using your physical body. You get up and walk around. You're using your physical body. That's how you interact with this world. And I was thinking about how the spiritual should have dominance over the physical. And I was thinking, well, because we use these physical bodies, we manipulate them around. You know, I think of the mind as a spiritual thing, But the brain is essentially the interface that our mind, our spiritual mind, you know, commands our body around. And the brain sends out the signals, the hands move, the feet move, you decide to get up, you take a drink, you take a sip of coffee. And this led me to the middle exercise of what is there any requirement? Like if you said, where's your spirit at? You know, people tap on their chest or, you know, my spirit is inside of me. But I thought about it and I was having this, and again, this was just a mental exercise, not anything I'd ever really shared here, I don't believe, before. Because it was simply a mental exercise, because at the end of the day, it kind of doesn't matter. But I was thinking, why do we assume our spirit is even inside of us? I'm not saying it's not, but again, this was a mental exercise. If we simply interface, we're using our brains to manipulate our bodies, and this is how we operate in the world, conceivably, our spirit could be anywhere. It could be, you know, asleep in the kingdom of God, and this is a dream. And in other words, if the spirit is using the body and the brain interface to use the body to work around and operate in this world, it really isn't a requirement that our spirit is even inside of us. We can just be remote operating this thing. we could just be in like a state of incubation in the kingdom of God as far as spiritual interacting, you know, connected as it were with the physical. Operating this thing around. Now, to us, this is our life, but our spiritual being could be anywhere if we're just using this to operate. Does that make any? I think that makes it. Again, it was just a mental exercise. It's nothing I felt the need to share here, but it's just you're going through that thought process, I guess is what I want to say. Our physical is supposed to serve. I'm trying to reel this back in. I get off on these tangents and then I have this hard time bringing things back in. The point here is, all of this, is at the end of the day, the physical with all its weakness, the flesh with all its weakness and worldliness, the worldly nature about it, is supposed to serve the spiritual. If it gains dominance over us, we get hooked on earthly pleasures and we start getting overly wrapped up into things of this world and don't keep them in their proper context, they get dominance over us. Then things are out of kilter. Then there's a problem. And because we're tied to the physical while we're alive in this realm, it's always going to have a tendency to drag us in. This is why a little folding of the hands, a little letting up on this spiritual. You know, in other words, putting in this work, as I always put it, you know, seeking God, prayer, reading your Bibles, and making a conscious effort. It's not only about trying to get closer to God. That is what it's about. But it is not. That's not all there is to it. Another element of that is keeping everything in its proper role, making sure that the physical, your fleshly nature, stays in servitude to your spiritual nature. Right? Who's in charge here? Making sure the physical nature is enslaved to the spiritual. Because a little folding of the hands, a little letting up, and a little just slacking off on these things. People use the term backsliding. You know, you're backsliding. Because this refers to, you know, a little letting up and you slip back in and pretty soon the flesh has dominance over you. And that's not where you want to be because these bodies are going to go back to the earth. That's where they're destined to go. Your body is going to end. It's going to cease functioning at some point and you will have no more use for it. If you allow it to become your dominant, that which dominates you, you know, your definition of yourself, then your definition of yourself is something that is inevitably going to disappear. It's going to return to the earth. It's going to go back to being dirt, ash, or whatever, however you wind up. You can't put your faith in those things. The spiritual is meant, you know, let me put it different. The physical is meant to serve the spiritual. That's why God gave you this body. That's why God gave you this life. this time on earth. That you have to keep make sure your spiritual and physical, your spiritual and fleshly self, the roles remain proper. The fleshly self, the physical self, serves the spiritual and not vice versa. And it's easy for it to get switched up. Like I was saying earlier about how easy it is for money to gain dominance over you when it's meant to serve you. As long as it's serving you, it's your servant. There's nothing wrong with money. It's not going to grab you and drag you off to hell. That doesn't have that power. It's just money. It comes, it goes. It's temporary. It's always temporary. The flesh needs to serve the spiritual. You got to keep the flesh in servitude to the spiritual. But because everything we know, all our interactions revolve around the flesh, the fleshly nature, the temporary nature, the earthly nature, it has a real tendency to get dominance over us. And this is why we can't let up. You have to put in this constant effort, because we're always operating in the temporal realm. So the flesh is always going to have that tendency to take priority just because we're in this world right now. So if we ask, or rather if we seek the answer to that age-old question, is man naturally sinful or not? Is his natural state? Well, in the fleshly sense, a man is going to be have a natural tendency to the things of this world, to material, to fleshly things, to sinful things. But the spirit, the man's spirit, should have a tendency and a natural tendency to draw towards God. So really the question is answered by which side of that equation makes a man, which side of that equation dominates a man. And I think at the end of the day, that question is answered by the man himself. How do you choose to live your life? Who do you serve? Where is your focus? You're always going to have a tendency to focus on the things of the world. That's the natural state, because you're in this world. You're stuck in it. These bodies bind us here. But do you put in the time? Are we putting in the time and the effort to remind ourselves and to seek God, to keep the spiritual in control and the fleshly serving the spiritual? Anyway, I got into a lot of different elements to that. We can't let up. This is really such an important thing. We can't get spiritually lazy because a little bit of slacking off. And look, that doesn't mean you can walk around in the spirit 24/7. You have to deal with things of this world. That's just the natural thing. But you recognize that so that when you do have the opportunity to quiet things down and set your heart and reset and get back focused on God, you do that. Don't pass those opportunities up, because you're always going to have this tendency drawing you towards the fleshly nature, the sinful nature. It just is. You know, it's not because you're a failed person or you're just not dedicated enough. That's everybody's natural state. If you're alive in this world, you're going to be naturally drawn to the earthly nature things, you know, the physical things, the fleshly things. It's your natural state. But that's why you've got to put in the effort to try to keep, you know, make sure that you keep the spiritual where it's supposed to be, the one in charge, so as to speak. But anyway, like I said, we kind of got off on a lot of different things. I hope you got something out of it. You got to put the effort in. You can't let up. This is why we put this work in. This is a manifestation of our faith, because we believe God is worth understanding and knowing. That's why we seek Him out the way we do. Anyway, like I said, we got to wrap up on that note. I appreciate you joining me today. Again, I hope you got something out of the entire show, but especially Christian specific segment. This is what is near and dear to my heart. So once again, thank you for joining me this week, and I hope I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.